were rocking out on some banjo music, and then I'm like, oh wait, this is us. So excited. Welcome to the Aging Well Together show. We have such a great show today, and it's a bit of a celebration day. Alicia, it is our 50th show.
Oh, congrats.
I know. So excited. I know. Wait, I should turn your microphone on. So there you go. So that way you can share the amazing celebration. And I thought, here's going to be my fun segue. And I thought that's so appropriate to be celebrating numbers today, because today's show, our guests are like, oh, Heather. Today's show is all about numbers. In a way, it's about financial planning, a subject I get so many questions about, and I am a bit too ignorant on this subject, so I'm hoping to be a little bit smarter after this show. I am thrilled we have the team from Trust Stone Wealth Management here. Two men who happen to be brothers. We have JT and Josh Stilley here with us. Yay!
Thanks for having us.
So excited. And I was thinking about this, Alicia. We've had a mother and daughter. Mm-hmm. We've had a father and daughter, because I had my dad on.
That's right.
We've had a husband and wife.
That's right.
And now we have brothers.
Brothers.
So, and it's funny because I just texted my girls last night seeing if they wanted to come and do a show together, and then we'd have sisters.
Oh, wow.
So we are we're quite the family affair here.
The family show.
Yeah. You know who will never be on this show? And your brother was on your show.
Oh, that's right.
2 weeks ago. Make sure, folks, 3 o'clock afternoon talk with Alicia, your brother was on. You know who will never come on this show? Our husbands.
Oh, never.
Never.
N-E-V-V.
No, no, no. Okay. All right.
He's not coming out either.
We could have invited our wives.
You could have, but see, we're getting right into it, but you can't, because one wife just had a baby and one wife is about to have a baby.
And somebody should be really nearby.
What, the babies?
No, the men should be really nearby.
Well, yes. I'm only about a 10-minute drive, so.
Yeah, I'm about
if
the
I have
same.
To split
so
out
that's
the
right.
Do
you have your
you
phone
why.
With you? If she literally, listeners, his wife is like due now. So if you go, if she goes into labor, feel free, JT, to just take off, and we'll just make up things, and Josh will have to handle it.
It could happen. My wife went 4 weeks early, so I think he's come right up on it.
Yeah, we got a couple weeks, but you never know.
All right, well, this is so excited. I am thrilled for all we're going to learn together. But as always, before we dive into our show, I want to give a shout out to the very hot and steamy team from the studio, WCOM LP, Chapel Hill, Carrboro. We're on 103.5 FM. Thank you, WCOM. And if you hear a little buzz, listeners, we do have a fan going, but studio, we need more air conditioning. But anyway, thank you, WCOM, for hosting our weekly Aging Well Together show. And the Aging Well Together show is brought to you by the tremendously helpful team at the Orange County Department on Aging. Woo! And a little bit of a program note. We are August 1st. Starting in September, all four shows will be about falls, because September is Falls Prevention Month. So excitement all about falls for September. But we hope, I want to do some bad pun, like, let's not fall into financial okay,
oh,
I can't do it. Today's show is not about that. All right, so please make sure to join us each week as we just tell ridiculously bad jokes, but also as we interview special guests to share information, resources, insights, and stories about the opportunities for aging well together. If you are listening to us live, you know that we are on every Thursday from 2 to 3, or you can stream us live through WCOMFM.org, or you can listen to any of our previous shows, our 49th, and in the next 48 hours, our 50 podcasts, through the Orange County Department on Aging's website, which is, get your pen and paper out, www.orangecountync.gov/aging. Again, orangecountync.gov/aging. On the website, you can find links to our Aging Well Together radio show, as well as a host of helpful resources about services in Orange County, North Carolina. We always highlight, because there's a lot of Orange counties out there. If you have suggestions about any suggestions about a topic for an upcoming show, or if you have questions about any of the resources we share, you can either call the Department on Aging, and their main number is 919-968-2070, or feel free to email me at the long email that is one smushed sentence, agingwelltogethershow@gmail.com. agingwelltogethershow@gmail.com. Okay, a shout out, not to the banjo, though I bet this band, I'm sure Robert Bradford also plays banjo, but a shout out to the other music we listened to for a quick moment, the Carrboro Bass Band, the Robert Bradford Quartet and Quintet, as I like to call it now, they added another person, for allowing us to use their great music. You heard just a quick moment in the opening, you'll hear more with the closing music. And you've heard her voice, my fabulous co-host, Alicia Reed.
Better known as Ed McMahon.
My Ed McMahon.
All right, I like it.
Alicia, I was thinking, we have to put your name on the website with the podcast, and I was thinking of calling you Alicia Ed McMahon Reed. So Alicia is always running from doing something fabulous. I'm sure she was just teaching a class.
I know.
Over at the Orange County Department on Aging, either one of the two senior centers.
I changed in the car while driving.
You did know. You really? Are you still teaching your 6 a.m. class?
Hey, let's not go there.
At sports.
But,
okay.
I'm finally an ombudsman.
You're finally an ombudsman. Oh, congratulations. Listeners, we had a show about ombudsmen, the folks that help to oversight and do advocacy and support. You should be doing this.
I just wanted to mention that. They don't know what it is.
Yeah, let's hear the spiel.
So they do. Well, then tell them what that is.
That's not what we're here for. To monitor and oversee the living spaces for older people.
Oh, okay.
They're too young for this. too young.
But this show we're going to get in. They're on Aging Well Together because they help people do financial planning.
Especially
so if they need assisted living, if they need skilled nursing.
If they need to get rid of all of their positions and go places.
Yes, we're going to get all into that. So Alicia is part of the volunteer oversight corps. There's a group of folks. There's a professional ombudsman, and then there are volunteers that go in to check about our county aging facilities to make sure that they are providing good quality care.
Add that to the list, huh?
I know. Add that to the list. I don't know if in this show you have any role for volunteers.
Mm-hmm.
If so, don't mention it because every guest comes on the show and says, hey, we could use volunteers, and Alicia signs up. How many places are you?
Too many. Let's talk about.
Okay. All right. So Alicia is amazing, and for me, less amazing than Alicia, but
no.
I'm Heather Altman. I have been in the aging services space for over 25 years. I help older adults and their families connect with resources in our community. I'm a caregiver for older family members, and at 53, almost 54, I am focusing on my own changing needs, so I'm super invested, as I like to say, in how we are all aging well together. Okay, our guest.
And I'm 65, just in case y'all don't know. I could be grandma.
Wow. Yes.
Good for you.
Gotta look at it.
You haven't told me your actual birthday. Are you actually 65 yet?
I'm glad you're here today.
Oh, gosh. All right. Okay. So, yes, we want to turn it over to JT and Josh Stilley. Are you both the managing partners?
Yes.
That. Okay, good. At Truststone Wealth Management, they have.
It is partners at the end, not management. But
okay, you're partners.
Truststone Wealth Partners.
Oh, Truststone Wealth Partners. I did not copy and paste well from the email. This is why I am going to try to talk as little as possible on the show because I have no business talking about anything financial.
It's all the same thing. It's just word vomit after the name.
Okay. Well, I just thought it was JT and Josh's shop. So I was like, oh, there's an actual name, Truststone Wealth Partners. And then they have all kinds of fun initials. I don't know what they stand for. They might tell us CFP, AIF, CPF. I'm assuming some of those have to do with financial planning, if not all of them. Mm-hmm. And they'll tell us all about it. Welcome, JT and Josh.
Welcome.
Thank you for having us.
Now, we have so much to get into, and we have a fun game to play. Alicia, you're going to be so excited. But before we do that, as always, we want to know a little bit about our guests. You can tell us, maybe we'll have whichever you, I know, we'll have the youngest go first. Tell us about where you're from and how you got involved and interested in a career in financial planning. So,
Did you start in kindergarten?
No, I did not start
in
kindergarten.
They're so young.
I did get into it right out of college, though. I went to a Coastal Carolina University down in South Carolina.
Nice.
I was there for football scholarship, actually. I would have followed probably my brother's footsteps and gone to UNC, but I wasn't good enough to play there. So
Well, literally, I have nothing to say. Football, again, yeah. I know maybe a little more about football than I do financial planning, but probably nothing. All right, go on.
I got into finance. You know, that's what I graduated with, a finance degree, specialized in wealth management. I knew I wanted to do something like this straight out of the gate. Luckily, JT was also at a firm that was doing something similar that I wanted to do. So I was able to use some nepotism there and get involved with the firm as well. And that's kind of where my career kicked off. But I just really enjoy the idea of working with individuals, specifically people nearing in retirement. You guys are doing a lot of great things yourselves with the Aging Well Matters. And that's kind of where I landed today. And JT, I'll let you take it off from there. But
Sure.
And we have some questions for you. We're coming back.
Yeah.
Oh, there's going to be so many questions, and they brought some fun ones for us.
Oh, good.
Staff.
Yeah. So I'm JT, so I'm the older brother. Actually, we are two of four. We have an older sister. I am the oldest son, and then we have a middle brother.
Are they all in finance?
No, just Josh and I.
Our dad comes from finance as well, though, so yeah. I guess it was...
A little bit of a family business
exactly.
Went through.
I'm 4 years older to the day. Funny enough, we have the same birthday, so that's always a
no
fun fact.
Way.
Oh, that is funny!
Is it new? Because our birthdays are around... When's your birthday? Well, you don't have to say. What's your Social Security number?
Can't tell you that.
All right. Oh, so June 3rd. Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Wow. Not too long ago.
So
not
fairly
too long.
Recently.
All right. Okay, so you're 4 years to the day. That's some cool planning. All right, go
yeah
on. How
so,
did you
so
get?
So I went to the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill.
Woo!
So sorry. Local, big Tar Heel fan. I graduated in 2014, so a little over 10 years ago. Mm-hmm. I majored in economics. I was actually on scholarship and team captain of the men's varsity swim team, so a little different sport. And that's where I met my wife. So she was a swimmer as well on the women's swim team. And I have to say, she was better than I was, so I'll give her credit for that.
Girl power. I love it.
Yeah, and you know, she's a lawyer. Funny enough, she's an estate attorney, so it tends to mesh well with what we do.
Oh,
yeah.
Wow.
And so, yeah, very proud of that. She's doing a great job. And
she's about to have a child, isn't she?
Yeah, yeah. So we're coming up doing
it's
a few
Kelsey
weeks.
No, Kelsey's Josh's wife.
I needed to make sure I mentioned my wife as well. Kelsey Stilley. She's amazing.
And your son's probably listening. What's your son's name?
Oliver Kloss Stilley. He's 3 weeks old right now.
Wow.
He's already a
probably either JT thinking about milk or pooping right now. So.
And JT, what's your wife's name?
So, Sarah.
Sarah, we're rooting for you.
Yep, she's doing great. I'm proud of her. But yeah, we fingers crossed, we've got a few more weeks here, so we're gearing up. But anyways, my transition in my career coming out of school, I knew I wanted to do something with finance. I'm a big math guy. And I really liked working with people. So financial services was kind of a no-brainer. Like Josh mentioned, our dad has, you know, his entire career has been in the financial services industry. So that was a good kind of transition. He actually got me in touch with a local firm. And I did an internship that mm-hmm summer after graduation. Went very, very well. Ended up signing on full-time. And I was actually there for an entire decade, so a full 10 years. So really enjoyed my time there. Loved working with those guys. Learned a lot. Wouldn't trade it for the world, but it did come time very recently where Josh and I, both working at the same firm, kind of collectively put our heads together, thought long-term about where we want to be. We both share a very unique vision with the service that we offer that we'll get into today, and just decided it was time to take the next step. Mm-hmm. So earlier this year, we did break away and start our own firm, Trust and Wealth Partners. So Josh and I are the managing partners there. It's been exciting. It's been one heck of a ride. It was just getting started, but so far, so good, and we're really enjoying it.
That's great. All right, we are going to get into it, but before we do, we've had to do this for a few shows, which is have a little bit of a disclosure statement. Listeners, we are an educational show and information and entertainment, but we're not telling you what to do. Let's see, we've done it with lawyers. We've done it with long-term care insurance. We have a lawyer coming next week, by the way. Uh-huh. We should have done it with the medical show we did recently because I kept saying the wrong medical information. I was like, I got to just be quiet. So I have an official disclosure statement, it's on behalf of Trustone. Oh, look, Wealth Partners. It says it right there.
It is.
But also, let me just throw that out there for Orange County Department on Aging, WCOM. It's, you know, disclaimer for all of us. But Trustone Wealth Partners, LLC, is a registered investment advisor in the state of North Carolina. The opinions expressed on this show are those of the speakers and do not necessarily reflect the views of Trustone Wealth Partners. Any statement or opinions are subject to change without notice. here's another big paragraph. The information presented is for general educational purposes. I want to add entertainment too. Only, and does not constitute tax, legal, or financial advice, nor is it intended to make an offer or solicitation for the sale or purchase of any securities, investments, or investment strategies. Oh,
you're
my goodness.
Good.
Listeners, if you are halfway. Listening to this show for investment strategies, you have it on the wrong channel. Do not listen to anything that is about purchasing securities, investments, or investment strategies. Okay, the information expressed does not take into account your specific situation, and you all have them, or objectives, and therefore it is not intended as recommendations for any specific individual. Listeners are encouraged to seek advice from a qualified tax, legal, or financial advisor to determine whether any information presented may be suitable for their specific situation. Investments involve risk, and unless otherwise stated, are not guaranteed. Well, that we all know just from watching the news and watching our own accounts. Past performance does not guarantee future results. All right, that's the end of the Aging Well Together show.
Okay. I need you to sign right here.
Everyone
please.
Loves compliance.
Can you sign by the sign right here, please?
I will have you all know I am a notary. I am a public official for the state of North Carolina, and I have my notary stamp, so I can notarize like.
Right now.
All right. Now that we said that, let's get into it. Whichever you want to tackle this first. First of all, let's start from the very beginning. What is a financial planner, and what services does a financial planner, and specifically you all at Truststone Wealth Partners, what does a financial planner do?
Yeah. You want to tackle that one, Josh?
Yeah, I'll go ahead for it. So just us specifically, you know, our service model is kind of two-tiered. We do work primarily with individuals nearing or in retirement, traditionally age 50 plus. It is more of a high net worth individuals, usually, you know, anywhere from a couple hundred thousand to, you know, 10 million and up. Mm. So anyone out there that's listening.
All right. Good
but
to know.
The second tier of our service, we also do actually work with small to mid-size companies implementing 401k plans for them, the retirement plan sponsors that they sponsor those plans. And that tier is probably not as specific for this podcast today, as a lot of what we'll talk about today will be more so about the individual services we provide and what that looks like.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I would just add, you know, kind of high level, these are just a few, but you're talking investment planning, tax planning, estate planning, income planning, retirement planning, and then risk and insurance planning. Longevity planning as well, we'll get into that. But I would say at a high level, that's what we do. We do get deeper into a lot of that, you know, benefits planning like Social Security, Medicare. Really, there's a lot to cover, but for the purposes of today, we're going to focus on those higher level services.
And one of those designations you read off the beginning was the CFP, a Certified Financial Planner.
Oh,
so that is kind of a good standard to have in the industry, and that's where the comprehensive approach of everything JT just listed off. It truly is a 360 view at the household or the individual from a planning perspective. And we do start with planning first rather than go straight to investments, but
yeah, you want to know what people's goals are. So as we're doing the alphabet soup, so that's what a CFP. What's an AIF?
AIF is Accredited Investment Fiduciary. And that is actually, the AIF and the CPFA are actually geared towards retirement plan services. So that's more so working with company sponsored plans, whereas the CFP, Certified Financial Planner, that's geared more towards the financial planning services that we offer.
You know, Alicia, I mean, maybe you should do this. You have so many other certifications and volunteers. You get one of these too next.
I only spend money.
Yeah, that's what we're really good
saving
at.
Saving is not done.
Spending a lot of money to put some letters behind your name.
Yeah.
So you talked about this for just in the intro about what types of clients you work with. So you gave the age, and there's sort of it looks like an income focus or a wealth focus, mm-hmm. that they generally have some pennies to their name kind of thing. Any other thing about the clients you work, I mean, you're local, right? Or do you have a national, like can someone from, like do they have to be here
so
in
we
North
can,
Carolina?
We can do an entire relationship with a client virtually, you know, through Zoom and technology nowadays. We do focus primarily on the, you know, Research Triangle Park area, Chapel Hill, Raleigh, Durham, everywhere within the vicinity. For people that do want to meet in person, we can accommodate that. But from a perspective of nationality, yes, we can work with anyone from any state at this point. But
all right. Well, given that the WCOM signal strength is about a mile, which is great. Anyone who's listening to us on the radio, that's your area.
Or streaming.
Yeah. Or streaming. Well, then that gets a little funky.
There you go.
Okay.
Our office, I would add, is probably less than 5 minutes down the road.
Oh.
We are fairly close for anybody who wants to meet in person. But like Josh mentioned, for anybody who is outside of the Triangle area or even outside of the state, we can always handle virtually as well.
Okay, good to know, good to know. And a question that I had, but it was, you also helped with some of the questions. So for our listeners who are unsure whether they need a financial advisor or how to select one, well, I'm going to start, that's actually two questions, because we're going to talk about what are some of the key factors you should look for. But one of the issues, and we talk about that in my family, is when can you take care of it yourself, and when do you need a financial, or when do people suggest you get a financial advisor?
Yes, that's a great question, one we get all the time as well. I'll start by saying everybody's different. I wouldn't say everybody needs or has to have a financial advisor. In a lot of cases, I think it would help. There are definitely do-it-yourselfers out there. And I would say it really comes down to the question of, do you have the time, the desire, and the knowledge to handle your finances yourself? I would write down those three: time, desire, and knowledge.
Desire, we're writing.
If the answer is no to any one of those three, I would say it makes sense to at least have a conversation with an advisor and see how they may be able to help.
Okay.
Because really, you're going to need to be able to check the box in all three of those to do it effectively. And if not, you may be missing opportunities.
Interesting. And if I was single, I would not have the time, desire, or knowledge to do all these things, but I'm married to someone who does.
That could be a spouse as well.
He loves doing it. But if I'm ever not with him, goodness
well,
forbid.
Hey, that,
no, I just mean, you know.
Well,
I'm not
I have
divorcing
a
him. I was
no,
killing him off in that scenario.
That. Thank you for clarifying that. I have a question to go with that, because my sister, she did it herself, and I did it with a planner or advisor. It didn't work for her at all.
Yes.
She lost a lot.
Yeah.
And a lot, like 10 years worth of, savings and wealth.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we're going to get into a lot of the common mistakes that happen in each one of the planning areas.
Oh, in our game.
Yeah.
We have a game. All right.
So I think we'll identify a lot of those issues that the do-it-yourselfers come across. And don't get me wrong, there's some issues that can come up with an advisor as well. So I would say,
yes, this
kind
goes
of segueing
into the, question.
Into the next question.
What are the factors to look for in a financial advisor?
If you decide it is time for you to have a conversation with an advisor, and I would encourage you to interview several, do not go with the first one you meet. Make sure you can compare.
And we'll have a few shows. I've had other, by the way, just so you know, even listeners will have other, because other financial advisors are like, can we come on your show? And I was like, the Stilly Brothers. They
All
made
right.
it happen first.
All right. Yeah. We always welcome, there's plenty of good advisors out there. It's always good to hear other opinions, so we always welcome that with our clients and prospects. Make sure you're having conversations with more than one advisor. Now, again, if we'll keep it kind of to the rule of three here, so three things to look for. First, I would say trust.
Okay.
In my opinion, that's number one. With any relationship, but especially a client-advisor relationship, you got to be able to trust the person across from you.
Your microphone fell back a little bit.
There we
That's
go.
Okay.
So you got to be able to trust the person across from you and know that they have your best interest at heart.
Yeah.
One question I would ask any financial professional you work with is, are they a fiduciary?
Okay.
I don't know if you've heard that word before.
I watch a lot of television, and yes, there was a commercial that, like, we are fiduciaries.
Right.
Yeah.
It's
I've heard of it.
Right.
It's a buzzword. We hear it all the time, but it sounds a little strange to those who are unfamiliar. But basically, it's just a fancy word that means that they are required by law to act in your best interest.
Mm-hmm.
You would think that'd be a no-brainer, but not everybody is a fiduciary.
I don't want someone who's not acting.
Right.
That's like
but
a
how
funny
do you
thing.
Know?
I would like to hire someone who doesn't care about
my
me.
Money. Me or my money.
Me or my money. Here's all my money, but don't care about me. Come on.
And I'm happy to report that is usually not the case nowadays.
Okay.
It used to be very common that not everybody was a fiduciary, but that's kind of transitioned and shifted over the years. So most everyone at this point will be, but it's still a good question to ask. On the trust aspect still, in addition to are they a fiduciary, is, again, looking at certifications and designations. Do they have the letters behind their name? And you don't have to, but it is encouraging to see to know that they've gone through the process of getting certified. CFPs, if you're looking for financial planning services, CFP is a big one. Again, certified financial planner.
Mm-hmm.
So if it's financial planning specific, I would ask that question. Moving on to the second factor, I would say value. And notice I say value here, not price.
Yes.
We are strong believers.
That's a nuanced term. Yes. I was using that recently in a conversation. Define value.
So value. So I think Warren Buffett said it best, honestly. He says price is what you pay. Value is what you get.
Oh, okay.
He was actually talking about investments in this regard, but it works for most everything, mm-hmm. especially anytime you're making a financial decision. So don't get me wrong, fees and price, super important. Always want to keep an eye on that, look at it. But at the end of the day, be critical and look at what are you getting for what you're paying.
Got it.
You know, there are low-cost solutions out there. There are some very high-cost solutions out there. They don't always correlate directly with the value that you're getting.
Interesting.
So what I would do is, again, by interviewing other advisors, look at the services you're going to receive and look at what they're charging and make the determination of which one you think is going to provide the most value. Again, it's not always going to be the lowest cost solution.
Okay.
Okay.
And the third
one. The third I would say is fit. So just how you fit with the advisor themselves from like a personal compatibility standpoint, as well as the services that you're looking for. So believe it or not, all financial advisors are not the same.
Yes.
We hear that one a lot. I think we've already kind of touched on it. But they're actually very different. They provide different services. Some go deeper than others. Some go more broad. But think about what you're really looking for. You know, if you're looking for investment management or say you want some in-depth tax planning, things like that, make sure the advisor you're meeting with offers those services and that the value that they're offering is there. You wouldn't want to, if you need tax planning services, you don't want to go to a financial advisor who only offers investment management.
Got it.
So make sure that the services you're looking for are a good fit as well.
And when you and I first met, we won't say too much, but we were talking offline about a client that wanted a lot of financial scenario planning. And she's like, my financial advisor can't do it. And I'm like, yes, they can. I can't even do what this is. So we were talking about they were choosing not to do it or they really weren't going that extra mile.
Yeah.
So really make sure that goes back to the value question.
Correct.
Like, are you getting what you need?
And that actually transitions well into a topic we didn't necessarily write down, but this is a good point here is, again, all financial advisors are different. It was common back in the day that financial advisors, you would think investment only, right? They're handling your investments.
Yes.
They're trying to get you the highest return possible.
That
and I would say that's still the core to what most advisors are doing.
Mm-hmm.
But in recent years, it's really transitioned more into the full financial planning picture. That's just one piece to the puzzle. There's a lot of other factors and areas you want to look at. And most have started to adopt that, but not all. So if you want that full picture or that financial plan rather than just investment specific, and your advisor is not offering that, maybe worth having conversations with others. The third piece, which is really kind of our vision for why we started this firm, we call it the longevity planning piece.
Mm-hmm.
So this is not looking specifically at financial planning, it's looking at lifestyle planning as you transition into and through retirement. Some advisors I don't want to speak for other advisors, but some generally will stick to the finances only, say lifestyle is kind of outside my purview. But what we found is a lot of times those emotional realities as you age tend to tie back to planning opportunities where there's a lot of value there as well. So that's what I would say is kind of a unique proposition for us is we do try to incorporate some of that longevity or lifestyle planning and why we really wanted to come on today's show because that's what you guys do.
Well, and that's so helpful. One question that I get weekly, not daily, but weekly, and I don't know the answer. You don't know I'm going to ask this, so I'm going to ask it now. When do you go to a financial planner? When this falls under the longevity planning and even taxes and spend downs and stuff like that. When do you go to a financial planner and when do you go to an attorney? Because in our world, my world working with clients who are looking at financing, assisted living and skilled nursing and I'm with folks on an income spectrum, and so Medicaid, actually at all, a lot of incomes level, spending down to Medicaid. So going back to my quick, what do they go to for you, and when is it like, no, you should really go to an attorney for this?
Well, I would say as you're getting to the point of execution, you always want to involve an attorney. But high level, if your financial planner offers estate planning services or Medicaid spend down planning, first off, make sure they offer that service. But most of the time, the financial advisor is speaking specifically to the plan itself, just kind of laying the foundation, having the conversations, doing the discovery, and kind of putting together that big picture. And then you ideally want to involve an attorney to execute all of that.
Okay, and that's why next week's show, we do have an attorney who does a lot, I think with Medicaid issues and spend down, because a lot of people don't realize that's where a lot of middle-class folks, people don't realize that when there's really extensive costs, when do you, and so, okay.
Yeah.
All right, so that's when you
Great
go
question,
to
though. Yeah,
all righty. All right. biggest mistakes before we get into our game, and Josh, feel free if you want to jump into this as well. Biggest mistakes you see when it comes to financial planning?
Yeah, so, I mean, there's obviously a lot of handful of things that can go wrong or things you want to look out for, but just at the end of the day, one thing we like to highlight is people just waiting to create a plan itself. You know, people procrastinate all the time. And one thing I like to focus on, this is can reference any decision you make in life, is, you know, time goes on no matter what. Time is the great equalizer. Mm-hmm. You know, there's probably someone listening to this right now who knows what they need to do. They know they need to talk to someone. The reality is the point that they stand today in time is the smallest gap that they'll have to make to get to that being on track. Mm-hmm. So speaking towards finances, the longer time goes on, the bigger that gap becomes, the harder it is to get back on track. So at the end of the day, just do it, create the plan, talk to an advisor, try doing it yourself, but really just get started. And another thing we would say is lack of implementation. That's one thing that I like to focus on a lot with clients is I believe the best advice is advice that's actually implemented. You know, you could sit there and...
Well, Alicia's entire show, by the way, I was listening to it last week, Afternoon Talk with Alicia, is all about making your health and wellness goals and not implementing it. Yes. I don't know. I do listen to you, Alicia, your show.
It's very
common.
So this
is an ongoing topic. So not just in finances, any goals. And I am the queen of saying I should do that.
Yeah, well,
that
we're going to get her. I'm going to get her to the Olympics.
All right,
I would add there, too, but... That's not just a common mistake with the do-it-yourselfers, but it is a common mistake even in working with advisors. You want to make sure that you're holding your advisor accountable because people get busy. You can sit on something, forget about it. So make sure that if there's something that needs to be done, that you assign who's going to be taking responsibility for it and hold them accountable.
Yeah, and that goes on to, too. I think having an advisor in place is somewhat of an accountability coach at the end of the day, and a good advisor will make sure that these plans are actually implemented. You know, two things we look for in clients. We want to make sure they're personable first, someone that we can get along with, someone that likes us as well. And also, we want them to be coachable at the end of the day. So we want them to be able to take the advice and be excited to implement it. And that, as us, in my eyes, as an advisor, is our job to make sure to get them excited to implement that advice. You know, at the end of the day, you can have some tax strategy that you put in front of a client that could save them, say, $10,000. But unless it's actually implemented and you're actually communicated with the CPA that might be working with the client as well, it's only as good as the paper it's written on. So it really comes down to implementation.
Yeah. And I was thinking, and you don't want to waste your time or their time. So if you're going to talk about a plan and they go, but then it doesn't happen, then it's a waste of everyone's time. And another interesting point about taxes, I know, again, just enough to get me in trouble, is things keep changing, right?
Yes.
They change the tax codes. I know in my own family's world, you know, you plan for this, and then there are things that change, and then, you know, so how do you keep up with all that? Is that where your initials come in?
I think that's also another a point of a mistake that I think's made sometimes, too, is a static plan versus a dynamic plan. So sometimes people will go get these one-off plans where it's like, okay, here's your plan. Give us, you know, X amount of dollars for it. The reality is retirement's fluid, finances are fluid, everything's changing. You could implement a plan today. 10 days later, your spouse could be, you know, diagnosed with a terminal illness, and then all of a sudden, everything flips upside down, everything's different. So same thing's true with the tax services. You know, the laws are always changing. You implement the advice based off what the rules are today, but you need to make sure you stay on track of what the rules will be in the future as well so that you can keep the fluidity of the plan involved.
Well, and you brought up an interesting scenario. I was thinking of a happier one, not your partner having a terminal illness. I was thinking, you know, we're going to keep going back to babies,
there
but I was thinking, you know, in your different life stages, I would think your plans change. I mean, you are new parent almost. And so I would think as you age, like I remember when I was young and starting to work, they're like, well, you can be more aggressive in things. You've got so many years to retirement, and then all of a sudden you have kids, and you start thinking about their needs, and then maybe you start thinking about college, and then now I'm in this sort of retirement thinking, planning. So I would think those conversations and the strategy changes as
Absolutely.
People's
yeah.
goals
yes.
and life change.
And more specifically with the clients we work with, again, people nearing in retirement, we dive very deep into what the reality of retirement actually is. JT touched on a little bit. But in essence, it's broken up into four different stages, and there's a misconception on what actually happens.
There are four stages of retirement. We're getting our... Alicia and I always get our pension. What are the four stages, Josh?
So the first stage is the honeymoon phase, and this is often what most people refer to, and they envision retirement is the entire time.
I know, and we have a lot... this is going to get into a lot of our shows on different topics.
Yes.
All right, because that's what they think.
And again, honeymoon phase, think, you know, rounds of golf, constant vacations.
Travel.
Sitting at a little cafe in Italy. Mm-hmm. Everyone loves, you know,
Everything's perfect. Okay.
But the reality is there's three stages that follow, and most people fail to plan for these, but there's what we call the big decision phase, and
this is more so,
identifying your roots, you know, are you going to downsize, are you going to move to a different state, where are you going to kind of live out your days in retirement, mm-hmm. what does that look like? And another third phase would be navigating longevity,
mm-hmm.
and this is when health concerns become more of an issue, again, going back to the more sad approach here, but, you know, if someone gets sick in the relationship, mobility becomes an issue, you kind of have to stay in-house a little bit more. Mm-hmm. And then the fourth and final phase is the solo journey phase. Again, not a happy one. A lot of clients and people we work with are, you know, married couples. What is the reality if a spouse dies? A lot of the time it is the male. What is going to happen with the female who might have a 10 to 15 year runway after that? Mm-hmm. And a lot of the times you'll see she actually goes back through the stages herself. Going back through kind of a honeymoon phase, mm-hmm. you know, another big decision phase, and then also ultimately navigating longevity herself. But that's kind of how everything's broken up. And we really like to focus on the education of all of this with our clients and then connecting them to the resources along the way, mm-hmm. to then implement the planning process on top of that.
I am loving that. You know what I'm going to do? Now self-promotion. Now that we have 50 shows is sort of put it into those different things and say which shows go to that. So last week's show was all about understanding assisted living and memory care.
Mm, yeah.
And it's different from nursing home care, different. And then we're going to have a show on home care. We've had a number of shows on caregiver support and resources. So a lot of the world that I live in is 2 and 3 and
yes.
4. I actually don't live in 1 as much, but to say, hey, here are resources. Again, Orange County Department on Aging's website that can speak to a lot of those. But okay.
So categorizing it sounds
like. I love that. All right,
I have
a
question about
and then
where we are today, because you mentioned coach. So, you know, in my day, we call them advisors and all of that. But I noticed you said coach. So it is more.
That's because they're sporty.
right. And
he's
I'm wondering.
Football player.
And that's where we are going, like a financial coach, advisor. You know, those words that we used are now. Are they better received as when you're coaching and you're presenting yourself that way, or does it even matter?
I think so. I think, again, it goes back to saying it in a way that will really resonate with the client at the end of the day. And using another reference, you know, you mentioned the estate planning process, mm-hmm. all of that. So we like to develop these teams around us. From a financial standpoint, we want to make sure we have reliable estate attorneys, CPAs to reference to once we get to the point of implementing that process of the plan. We like to think of ourselves kind of as the quarterback within the relationship. We have our hands in every piece of the financial picture, and we like to be able to, you know, even sitting on the meetings when the CPA comes in, becomes involved, or sitting on the meeting with the estate planner, so we fully understand and we oversee everything that's going on. Mm-hmm. And we want to, and another, you know, quirky thing to say is we want to be our client's 411 and their 911.
Mm.
Anything, any question that comes up, we want to be part of it. Any emergency that comes up, we also want to be part of that. So we want to really go deep with our clients on the service level.
Ah, and I'm like smiling at Josh as he's like, we want to be the quarterback. we should work together just so you could do as many sports references as possible that I won't understand. I do understand that one. Okay, but now I'm just having fun with that. All right, speaking of sports and games, we have a game.
Okay.
I want to play our game because these are really good topics. And so thank you for Stilly is putting together fact or fiction game.
Yes.
Though I will tell you, here's another disclaimer. I was nervous about this game because I'm much more into psychology than financial planning, and there is a theory that when you hear something, even when it's wrong, because you've heard it, you think it's correct. So listeners, when you hear this, do not think about it until you hear whether that is fact or fiction, because what I don't want to be doing, have you ever heard that theory that when?
Yes. Yeah.
Yes. So, okay. So we're going to do fact and fiction. Is that okay if we jump into the game? Because
let's do it.
Yeah, I
know this
will
hit some of our
questions.
Make sure
we touch on a lot of
these
points.
All right. So the first topic is on investment management. And so I get to ask a statement and then you tell me whether it's fact or fiction and then go into it more. Investment management. After a severe market drop, it is best to move my investment portfolio to cash temporarily to avoid any further losses and protect what I have. I actually think I know this one.
What do you all think?
That's fiction.
I don't think so.
You're not supposed to touch it.
Did I know
this
it?
Maybe,
it
did
not
work.
Let it ride.
This was probably one of the mistakes. And it's a very common one. You all are right.
Don't touch it.
Okay, yay, we got that.
Okay, good. Yeah, she did. And she lost a lot.
Yes, this is one of the most common, or actually I would say the two biggest mistakes we see, and they both kind of fit this statement, are trying to time the market and falling victim to emotional investing.
Yes.
Those two are probably the biggest detriment that we see amongst just the average investor.
Yes.
And it comes back to actually, funny enough, you mentioned psychology, it's the behavioral psychology aspect of it. Our minds are wired a certain way to where we fear loss.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of times the fear of loss is greater than the excitement of a gain. And so when the market starts to drop, we start to get very fearful. The further it drops, the more fearful we get, and we're fighting that urge to sell and protect what we have.
Yes.
A lot of people, if they're not working with an advisor or
understand it, and forget it, not look at it again.
Correct. That's usually the best approach, making sure we'll get into some of the do's rather than the don'ts. But loss aversion is huge. People fall victim to this all the time. Mm. Essentially, what you're doing, you're not really protecting yourself. You're actually locking in those losses.
Yes.
Okay. So rather than locking in the losses, I would think of it as buying on sale.
Hmm.
Let's say you have an investment that you bought.
Buying on the sale.
Yeah, right.
Sales.
Everybody loves sales. So let's say you have an investment, whether it's just a stock or a fund, whatever it may be. You owned it at $100 and it lost 20%. So now it's worth $80. Mm-hmm. It's a little scary.
Mm-hmm.
But if you liked that stock or you liked that investment at $100, why wouldn't you like it at $80? You're getting it at a 20% discount. So in many ways, it depends investment by investment, but in some cases it can actually make more sense to buy at the bottom. The ultimate goal is to sell at the top, buy at the bottom.
Yeah, what is it? Buy low, sell high?
Buy low, sell high, but our minds are fighting that
right.
all the time.
I know, and I'm already thinking of fun stories, but I don't want to hold us back. Okay, next question. And this is about retirement planning. Retirement planning involves two distinct stages, the accumulation phase where I am building my savings and the distribution phase where I am drawing from my savings. I have a guess with that one. Do you want to guess?
No.
I'm going to guess that's fact.
That's true.
Heather's killing it. It's a fact.
Okay.
She's two for two right
two
now.
I network with a lot of people for the show, and I have spoken, so I actually saw the...
She cheated. She did a cheat sheet.
No, but I didn't do it for this show.
No, I didn't include the answers.
Oh, okay.
No, yeah, he did not give me the answers. I've seen the iceberg thing or the hill thing where the one phase is accumulating, and then you're using it.
Great visual.
All right, you answer.
That is a good visual, because that's how I was looking at mine.
I saw it. I was like...
Okay.
It is. And so it does, at a high level, it comes down to two stages. The accumulation phase is actually where the large majority of people are focused. These are your working years.
Right. Yes.
There's so much education and focus around the accumulation stage, which is building up your nest egg.
Yes.
But there's not a lot of intel or information on how do you turn that into income, which we'll get into in just a second. But that is, again, a big focus of ours. Sometimes you get folks kind of approaching retirement. They say, hey, I have this big nest egg. I've got, $1 million. What does that mean for me? And, it's a little scary to know that you've saved that much and really don't know what
that means. And then they don't want to spend it. I will tell you, in the long-term care world where I am, I can spend that $1 million so fast. Because,
yes.
If you're looking at $150 a year, okay.
Yeah. And I would say, there's a lot, really on the accumulation stage, it's about two things. Investing appropriately, which we've kind of touched on already.
Okay.
And then saving appropriately. So making sure you are putting your savings towards the areas that are going to give you the most bang for your buck.
And that's an issue that I'm seeing lately. And I've at all ages, I have these teenagers. Well, I have one teenager left. They're getting money and they're so excited about it. And so they immediately want to spend it. And so this issue of savings, we need to do a whole other show. Okay. All right. Next one, I am not sure. And we're going through these quickly and then we'll see if we have more time. This topic is income planning. This one's hard. Using a 4% annual withdrawal rate. That's a hard word. 4% annual withdrawal rate from my investment accounts will ensure that I never outlive my retirement savings.
This is a tough one.
I know, because my husband's 90 and he's doing it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting.
I'm
it's kind of a trick.
Guess this one. I'm going to say fiction. I kind of want to say fact. I don't know. I'm going to say fiction.
I say fiction.
Because it's so specific.
Fiction is correct. But again, it can go, you know, you can talk about it in different ways. But going back to, you mentioned your husband might be doing it.
Yeah, he
is. It's a good thought process to have.
I keep telling you on the air, he's 90.
He literally is 90. She's not joking.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah,
so I'm watching these investment things.
To think about that,
yeah, well, it's okay. Don't think too hard.
He can do what he wants to do.
But you know, but I was just doing the investment things. I'm thinking, So he did good, but that question.
Yeah,
it's
Josh,
a good
Josh
strategy, but we think there's a better
and
one.
I answer the exact reasoning behind it, if we take a step back, you know, for the accumulation phase that JT just talked about, you know, you save up all these accounts, you have all this money, and then you get to this point, okay. That whole time you're accumulating all that, you had kind of a fixed income source. You probably worked for an employer, you're getting a monthly paycheck. And what happens is the day you retire, that fixed income source becomes variable, meaning it's coming from different places, different accounts. Maybe there even is some fixed assets to it, say Social Security, a pension, something like that. But there's a variable aspect of it, and that's usually the investment count itself that goes up and down a lot. Mm-hmm. And it's not as reliable, and that's why people need to focus on that piece of the puzzle. Mm-hmm. That piece of the puzzle. And the behavioral and risk preferences for clients are based off this. So we like to have the conversation with clients of saying, hey, looking at all of your assets as they are today, and we're entering this distribution stage between, say, your Social Security and this pension from this employer, about 60% of your paycheck is going to be fixed, meaning we can rely on this income each month.
Okay.
But the other 40% is going to be left up to this variable aspect, meaning it's invested in the market, it's invested in different things, it's going to go up and down. And that's the spot where the 4% rule comes into play. And the idea of it is, you know, if you take 4%, hopefully you won't start to distribute from the principal of the assets themselves. But again, going back to another question that we answered, it was basically, that's looking at things as if it was a static approach. If you look at dynamic planning, things are changing ever and evolving constantly, so it's fluid. 4% is not a reliable approach. Another way we like to look at it is through a guardrail approach.
Mm.
And guardrails for us is essentially we're able to take an intake of every client, the client's every asset, and then we can come up with an exact number from a monthly income distribution point, and we can set an upper guardrail and a lower guardrail. And essentially what happens is if we ever hit the upper guardrail, we're able to then spend more. If we ever hit the lower guardrail, we want to pull back a little bit and spend less. And through plan design, we'll always make sure that there's less of a chance that we'll have to stop spending and more of a chance that we can keep spending.
So my takeaway, because this is where I say back and you say, because this is like, what? Okay, so I think the end of this, the moral of this story is you figure out what is the amount of money you can actually spend based on, so what you can pull out to spend that won't mess you up.
Yeah. and what I would say, I would add to Josh's response is, so the 4% rule that was always kind of touted as the golden rule out there, if you take out 4% per year, so if you're doing the math, if you had, let's say, $1 million invested, and took out 4%, that's $40,000 a year. Typically, that's going to give you about a 90%+ chance of never outliving your savings, even if you're living into your mid to late 90s.
Okay.
So that was always kind of touted as the golden rule. But like Josh said, that's a fixed distribution rate, and the market's going up and down all the time. So there still is cases where you could outlive your savings. And also what ends up happening, this is potentially the bigger risk, is a lot of times you end up with so much money, it could be a multiple of what you started with, where you kind of wasted that. Like, you worked so hard for all this money, you never got to spend it down.
And then you get taxed on it.
Exactly.
And that's a whole,
and so by doing more of a dynamic approach with guardrails, so like, let's just say that $1 million, the upper guardrail is if it grows to 10% to 1.1 million, or if it drops 10% to 900,000. Generally, you can start at a higher rate, like in the 5 to 6% range. And as it bumps up, you can actually increase that withdrawal. And as it bumps down, which will happen periodically, you can make some minor adjustments, get a little bit tighter with your money for a short term while the market rebounds. And it allows you to put your money to work for you a little bit better. And you spend more of that money over retirement, get to enjoy more of that. It's kind of a growing topic that's gaining a lot of traction, and how we prefer to go about it.
Yeah, and I've heard some things, and of course I go into the world that I'm in every day and our show, which is $40,000 a year is not going to pay for that long-term care needs. And so when do you sort of say, hey, again, when you're moving from that honeymoon stage into the big decision, into the what's it called? Your long navigating the longevity. Okay. All right. So let's go on to the next question because I want to make sure we do all of them, but then we're going to go back to some of these. Okay. Let's have fun with tax planning. All of my retirement investment accounts will be taxed the same way. That is fiction.
No.
We're both saying no.
I mean, I've experienced that. No.
Alicia's like, no.
That one should be fairly obvious. So I'm glad you both jumped on fiction.
That one is definitely fiction.
I think I'm doing well with this.
You are. I think
Heather's. And then, what's your response to that? How is this taxes differ?
Going back to the fixed versus variable sources of income in retirement, they're all taxed differently depending on the different accounts and income sources for the individual. So we like to view it as, you know, there's kind of four different way taxes are assumed in retirement. There's ordinary income that can happen. Mm-hmm. There's capital gains that can happen. There's tax deferred money, and there's tax free money.
I've heard all of these. Again, I watch a lot of television, and it's like,
and we and
I guess listen to my husband.
This is an active area that we really love from, you know, working with our clients from a planning perspective. But we don't view the tax system as a burden, but more so as kind of a set of rules that the IRS created. And we almost like to gamify the system a little bit, where it's basically, hey, the IRS has these rules in place. And if you play the game correctly, you can kind of maximize your savings and reduce taxes throughout the process.
Oh, people love this. Wait, what? Say them again. I got tax deferred, tax free.
Ordinary income. So that would just be like even like your Social Security, you know, if you have like a partnership income or anything like that.
What was the fourth?
Capital gains.
Oh, capital gains. And that's...
And so all of these are taxed differently. And we like to refer them to them as tax buckets.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
So think
like
of it, you're drawing from these buckets to achieve the income you need. And by pulling the money from the right bucket, you can, in a sense, control your tax bracket in retirement.
And something we would do is sit down with clients every year. This is something we focus on is income planning and tax planning, where we'll say, hey, let's look at what your income picture looks like for the next year. Mm-hmm. And what we do is we kind of have that income bucket there. Let's say someone needs $100,000 to pull from to live off of for the next year. Mm-hmm. We want to take these four different tax buckets and mix and match in the most efficient way possible that it reduces taxes for that year.
Got it. It does. It does. All right, so we've got three more questions. This is super fun. Estate planning. Oh, this is a goodie. I know the answer to this one. Only wealthy individuals need an estate plan. Alicia. That's fiction.
Another easy one, but you all are killing it. Good job. So that is fiction. Some folks do believe this. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so
they do.
There's several things to keep in mind when it comes to estate planning. The popular one is getting taxed on your estate. And usually that's really going to come into play from a federal level if you're very, very wealthy. Mm-hmm. Right now we're talking north of $25 million for individuals who are married, about 13 or so for just individuals themselves. That is sunsetting in the next few years back to those tax law changes. So, I mean, it's still up for determination here, but it's probably going to be about halved. Mm-hmm. Even still, that's going to affect very few individuals. But estate planning is not really about just minimizing taxes. It's more about protecting yourself and your beneficiaries.
Yes.
So we believe that everybody should have an estate plan. Doesn't matter what your age is. I mean, we need estate
Because we'll
plans.
Talk next week about probate and all these complicated things you have to go into, and which is a pain.
And so I would break it down into kind of two levels. One is kind of the simple approach that I think checks the boxes on the immediate needs. And then step two would be that more advanced planning where you're talking about probate. Mm-hmm. So the first level, again, I believe everybody needs this, is just having your basic estate documents in place. Mm-hmm. So these are going to be things like a will, a living will, powers of attorney, so that's both healthcare and financial, guardianship, if you have children or are responsible for minors, if you have grandchildren.
Alicia and I will take care of your baby.
Yeah.
Go on.
And then the last one is a big one, is making sure all of your investment accounts are titled correctly. So if they are retirement accounts, it's referred to as beneficiaries. So you want to make sure that those are set up correctly. And then other accounts, it's called transfer on death. So you want to make sure, again, that it's going to the right person. So everybody needs to have that done. It can be done very easily. If you have a simple situation, there are some great solutions out there that cost no more than a couple $100. Mm-hmm. Really quick and easy process, and you're going to sleep a lot better at night. I'm not going to name names, but if you want to give us a call, we can point you to some resources.
Yeah.
Step two.
and we have other attorneys. Go on.
Yes. I was just going to say step two is when those more advanced planning tactics come into play. That's when you're trying to avoid things like probate, which I'm sure you'll get deep in next week.
Yes.
It's not a fun process. Anybody who has gone through this before with, say, a family member or loved one knows it is not fun. It is basically the process of the courts deciding and facilitating how to distribute your assets.
It's horrible.
And it's horrible. So you can actually, in a way, avoid a lot of probate or probate entirely by getting more advanced by establishing things like trusts, again, making sure that all of your plans are in place and all your accounts are titled correctly. At that point, again, if you have a very advanced situation, you probably want to engage an attorney, maybe at a higher level firm, to make sure that you're meeting all of your needs. It can be a little bit more expensive, but they're still, again, weighing that price versus the value is important.
Great. And again, future shows. And another attorney reached out who's going to come on the show at some point who specializes in farms and transferring of farms. And I was like, oh, wow. We do have an agricultural part of Orange County and our surroundings. So anyway, all right, two quick ones. Okay,
Yep.
All right. The next one, risk insurance planning. Long-term care insurance can help cover the costs of in-home care, assisted living, and nursing homes. Yes, that is true.
That is true.
We've had shows on that. JT just looked at Josh. Josh, are you telling us about that? Or we just
go to one of our podcasts.
We can go quick on that.
Yeah. And we actually listened. I think it was Bill Comfort. He did a good job.
He's wonderful.
Explaining.
Yes.
So I'll be brief
here.
From our perspective, we're all about kind of laying out the options for our clients. And there's kind of three key features that we like to look for. And just like, you know, advisors, insurance products are not always created equally. So there's different things you want to look for. Three things that we look for is kind of the long-term care leverage, meaning if a long-term care event happens with the invested dollars you put into the policy, what does that leverage look like? So if you put in $1, are you getting $10 back if a long-term care event happens?
Oh, that's what leverage means. I had no idea.
Wealth preservation is another one that we like to look at, meaning safeguarding your wealth even if a long-term care event doesn't happen. Meaning if you invest in this type of policy, is it a use it or lose it type of policy where you might not get anything back, therefore affecting your beneficiaries, they might not get anything from an inheritance standpoint. The third thing is flexibility, which is just enjoying the freedom of, you know, transferring the funds out, or are you kind of locked into it? And then when you look at those three key features, the kind of options that we see for the ability to, you know, pay for long-term care if it happens, is you can do self-funding, you can do traditional long-term care policy, there's a hybrid long-term care policy, or you can also just do like a life insurance with a long-term care rider. I don't want to get into the details of all of them. But essentially,
there's a lot of options.
You can kind of figure out behaviorally what clients like, whether they want more of a guarantee type of setup, or if they want, you know, maybe more of their wealth to go to their heirs in case the long-term care event doesn't happen. Lay out the facts for the client and say, hey, here's what it looks like, and let them make the decision.
All right. This is great. And our last question, longevity planning. Financial security is all that is needed to ensure a successful and fulfilling retirement.
Financial
security is all that is needed to ensure a successful... I don't like all that is needed. I'm going to have a problem with that. So
yeah,
I'm going to say fiction with the all. Okay, what's the answer?
Fiction. We kind of jumped the gun on it, but going back to those that longevity planning, those four different phases is kind of where that comes in, that kind of needs to revolve around the financial aspect of the client as well. One thing that we like to quote is basically, you know, we think a successful retirement is having enough money to go to sleep at night and a purpose to wake up in the morning.
Oh.
And that goes back to
idea.
There you go.
And that goes back to those four different phases, really being there alongside the clients, you know, as they age through these different phases, making sure they have that purpose to wake up. You know, there's three questions that we kind of ask people too. They're kind of trivial, but it's who's going to change my light bulb? How will I get an ice cream cone? And who will I have lunch with?
Oh.
And these kind of answer kind of more so like, for example, who's going to change my light bulb? The mobility of aging in place in your own home. Something as simple as a light bulb going out, how is that going to be fixed?
Sure.
What does your mobility look like in retirement? How will I get an ice cream cone? Kind of the small things that make life worth living. How do you keep enjoying those things as you age? Mm-hmm. And then who am I going to have lunch with, which really dives into the kind of the socialization aspect of retirement.
Yes.
And there's a lot of data out there, but people who tend to socialize more in retirement not only live longer, but have much more successful retirements. And
oh my gosh, I'm loving all of these things. Maybe I do want you to send me the notes that you had for this, because these are great. Okay, really quickly, where can listeners go to find additional, this is not fact or fiction, this is an actual, where can listeners go if they want more information and resources on these topics?
Yeah, so I mean, there's a lot of great information out there. A quick Google and you can find it. I would try to search for reputable sources and advisors. We also have a lot of resources available on our website, or you can reach out to us directly. It's www.truststonewealth.com, spelled exactly like it sounds. most all of it is free. We're trying to educate folks to make the decisions on how they want to implement. If you prefer to work with an advisor to implement, awesome, give us a call. If you'd rather do it yourself, we're going to give you the resources to do that.
Oh my gosh, this is so helpful. Thank you so much. And so disclaimers, hope you all were entertained and educated, but don't sue any of us. Super, super thank you to JT and Josh Stilley. So happy that you came on. Thank you to WCOM, LP, FM, Chapel Oakharborough for hosting our show. Thank you to Orange County Department on Aging. Alicia, as always, thank you. And listeners, thank you so much. We will see you and talk to you next week.
Thank you.